The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
Wrestling to the Max. SmackDown. Review.
And we are live to tape for the W2M Network with the Wrestling to the Max SmackDown Live Review for Tuesday, July 24th, 2018. Good evening, afternoon, whenever you're listening to this, everybody. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Joining me, as per usual, the Penguin to my Batman, Brandon Biscobain. Unfortunately, the co-hostess with the mostest, Miss Liz Puglisi, had a family emergency this week. Therefore, I jinxed us, and she's not able to join us.
Was that a decent Penguin?
Yeah, it was okay. Don Callis at Slammiversary looked like the Penguin, though. Like, I don't know if you've watched Slammiversary
yet. No, I have not yet.
I recommend that you do so.
Okay. I'm so far behind on my Impact that it would be confusing, but I guess that's as good a time as any to catch up.
Okay, to be fair, when has anything in Impact ever made sense anyway?
Good point.
Actually, new regime's not terrible. We're getting completely off topic
yeah,
already.
Yeah, we are.
Show just started. Hey, Brandon, guess what?
What?
Spotify.
It's finally here!
But Glacier still hasn't shown up. We'll let you know when he does. I'm seriously going to work on that. Like, if I go to that Remix Pro show that he's on, I'm totally going to see if I can't get him to cut, like, an intro for us or something.
That would be great.
I'm going to pull some strings and see what I can make happen there. The W2M Network has finally joined Spotify in addition to iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Spreaker, Podbean, CastBox, YouTube. You pick a platform with which you listen to podcasts, you can probably find us there. You know what, Brandon? The Kickoff is actually on Spotify now as well.
So huzzah.
You are officially a double Spotify artist.
And you know what was funny? The first thing, the top episode, not after this one will be up, but when I looked at it yesterday, the top episode that was up there for W2M was our SmackDown episode from last week. Or, actually, no, 205 Live from last week. And it was when you said, no, Wilfred, you cannot be on the podcast. And Tori got a kick out of that. She was like, Wilfred's on Spotify.
It's a dog-eat-dog world, Brandon. What can I say?
Yep.
All right, now that the extracurriculars are out of the way, what do you say we get into tonight's SmackDown Live review?
Let's do it.
All right, our opening segment that we see are Miz and Maryse arriving at the building, and they have their little girl with them too. Aww. Okay, can we keep the babies off television, like, for real? Like, seriously.
Well, supposedly.
Now, and we'll talk about that in a little bit here. Hashtag stunt baby. But I have no interest in seeing Monroe Sky or Birdie Bella involved in this. Well, I guess technically it would be Birdie Danielson. Leave the kids off of the screen. They're too young. Mm-hmm. Not cool.
Well, I mean, to be fair, though, I mean, the Hardy's been doing it for years now.
That's different. Maxwell's a natural-born entertainer.
True. I'll give you that.
And if you disagree, you'll be deleted! Our opening segment, scheduled for 10 minutes.
Nope.
It's Randy Orton coming out to discuss why he pulled Jeff Hardy disgustingly by the ear. Seriously, that was freaking gross.
It was. It really was.
It turned my stomach seeing the replay last night, let alone watching it live the week before.
God.
Randy comes out and talks about, why did you do what you did? Why do you think I did what I did? Because he feels disrespected. He's the Rodney Dangerfield of the WWE. Claiming that people don't respond to him the way that he does. They do everybody else, despite the fact that he has been the one constant in the WWE over the last 16 years when he's not throwing out his shoulder. Stating that he's the one setting the table for the WWE superstars to put food on the plates for their families. They don't cheer for him like they do for somebody like an idiot like Jeff Hardy, because he's not some indie darling with a stupid stolen hand gesture like AJ Styles, or somebody who changes the color of his merchandise every couple of months to get more of your money, which was a not-so-subtle shot at John Cena. He talks about the fact that he started off as the Legend Killer, but the true Legend Killers are the fans, because they turn people into something they're not. So he's going to go around and destroy everyone that the fans love, starting with Jeff Hardy, as he's going to write the final chapter of Jeff Hardy's career. You can call him whatever you want to, the Viper, the Legend Killer, but just make sure you remember the three letters that he's best known for, his initials, R-K-O. I actually thought this was a pretty good little promo to start off the show here, and a good way to make up for the fact that Jeff Hardy wasn't going to be on the show here was to have Orton come out and address the situation at hand while not giving too much away.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good promo overall. The one thing that was a little confusing, though, was, and if he put it the way that you put it, it would have actually worked, but he basically said, you know, I've been here longer than anyone else, and, you know, he specifically talked about how, you know, he specifically talked against how Hardy, you know, hasn't been there for that as long, and how he's an indie darling, and yada, 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 which really isn't true, because Hardy's been there long. I mean, yes, he was gone for a long time, but overall, in his overall career, Hardy has been there longer than you, Orin. So,
I feel like we had this conversation in the group chat last night. And I'm going to tell you the same. I'm going to tell everybody listening right now the same thing I told you in the group chat here. Hardy is technically an indie darling.
I know.
Because of the whole Woke and Hardy thing that was done in GFW Impact Wrestling there, yes. It revitalized and rejuvenated Jeff Hardy's career with the smart fan base, the indie fan base.
Yes. No, I get that part, but, like, if you look at it outside of that, it's like, yeah, Jeff has been there since 99, so...
Technically, Jeff's been there since 95, but... All the same, that ends up taking us backstage as we continue on. We go backstage for a pre-recorded segment as we're getting ready for our first match here, where Zelina Vega, Andrade Cien Almas, Rusev, and Lana all get into a big fracas. And eventually a singles match between Rusev and Almas is made for later on in the show. They show that clip before the opening contest. But before we get to that opening contest, we get a recap of last night's historic pay-per-view announcement. Woo! Yeah! Party! This is the only time I'm going to mention that goddamn pay-per-view.
Can I just say, since I wasn't able to do it yesterday, if we were able to do a Raw review...
Hey, that's my show, pal.
A Raw review last week, or this week, rather. My one-word review for it would have been historic. And please, I hope you hear the sarcasm in my voice.
I took it a step further on the Raw reaction since you mentioned it.
Oh, please. I want to hear this now.
We did the review. It was just me and Andrew because Tony had a family emergency come up. So it was just Andrew Ballas and I on the Raw reaction. Every Monday night live at 11:30 p.m. on the Chairshot Radio Network. Shill! Anywho. And... we talked about it in the opening segment, like we gave it some semblance of seriousness when we talked about it in the opening segment, because it is actually a big announcement that they're going to have an all-women's pay-per-view in the WWE.
Yes.
That being said, the way that they constantly drove that point home on Monday night by mentioning it in every single freaking segment, anytime somebody else mentioned it throughout the recap of the show that we did, I just played the first 10 seconds of Evolution's theme song.
That's a good one.
So all you hear sporadically throughout the broadcast is, no, just the guitar riff at the start.
Oh, okay.
Not anything lyrically or anything, because I don't want to get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Just the opening 10 seconds with the first guitar riff from Line in the Sand.
Yeah.
It felt fitting.
Mm-hmm.
But, and Andrew and I had to laugh about it.
No, oh, of course. Well, the one, and we'll get back to talking about SmackDown in a second, but the one that made the least amount of sense, just because it sounded so fake and it sounded so out of character for him, and just hearing him talk about it, and it was just cringeworthy, was Braun.
I can't use the verbiage that I used on the reaction to describe that, but I believe the comment that I made was something along the lines of, why the f*** does Braun Strowman care about a women's pay-per-view?
Yeah.
Anywho, our opening contest scheduled for one fall is the aforementioned Rusev versus Andrade Cien Almas match. All right, AJ Styles last week, Rusev this week. Please tell me you're starting to see what everybody else sees here, Brandon.
This one was at least they used it in the right way. But this one was definitely more of the Andrade that, you know, we're all used to seeing. And yeah, I'm not saying that in a good way.
But at the same time, though, with the fact that Lana's out there at ringside for Rusev as well, it kind of makes sense.
Oh, no, that's why I said it makes more sense here, because at least you have a buffer to where it's not going to be pure, you know, just her, you know, doing whatever the hell she wants.
Lana and Zelina Vega get into it at ringside throughout the course of the end of the contest here, which brings Aiden English down to separate the ladies from scrapping. They scrapping! They throwing fistuses! Zelina proceeds to jump on Aiden English's back, knocking him into Lana, knocking Lana out. Elizabeth! Sorry, I had a flashback there. I'm good. Almas takes advantage of the distracted Rusev, and they hammerlock DDT later. It's 1-2-3 for Andrade Cien Almas. Speculation is that after his performance against AJ last week, Andrade Cien Almas is actually in line for a very strong push on SmackDown. Frankly, SmackDown's kind of the new blood show. There aren't a whole lot of established main eventers on the Blue brand. I'm okay with it. I like the fact that they're building a new talent.
With the exception of AJ, I mean, there should have been one, but botched that.
I mean, technically, as far as AJ goes, AJ's a new face to WWE.
Fans. Well, yes. But he's, overall he is a new face, I mean, you can say that about just about everyone. I mean, in the main event picture, the guy that's been around the longest, with the exception of the invisible one, I'm not talking about John Cena. With the exception of the invisible one, the only one that has been around consistently longer than, you know, six years is Orin.
It is at this point that I remind you that the invisible one is on Raw, not SmackDown. Therefore, my comment about SmackDown being the land of the young.
Oh, no. But what I'm saying, you know, overall in WWE, because even looking at Raw, you know, the only person that has been, well, I guess Dolph too, but, you know, other than Dolph, the only person that is, you know, higher up on the card that has been around longer than since, you know, 2012 is Lashley, and he moved on. Same with McIntyre. So everyone who has been around, who is at the top of the card right now, have come in at the earliest in 2012 with Reigns and Rollins.
mean, that's a fair assessment, I suppose. It is definitely a youth movement in the WWE.
It basically is the new generation.
Does that mean we're coming up on the new Attitude Era, or are we going to have to sit through 1995 again? Because I don't know if I can go through the second.
I would hope that it would be the new Attitude Era, but I highly doubt it, unfortunately.
R-Truth announces that he has a match with Samoa Joe coming up later in the show. R-Truth was 46 years old.
Okay, Truth is one that, you know, has been around for a while.
But he's not near the main event picture, either.
No, not at all. Everyone who's old is, like, lower down on the card. Like, R-Truth and Goldust.
Lana and Aiden English are bickering backstage when Rusev tells them to break it up. Rusev then talks about the fact that maybe he should just walk away from both of them professionally because Rusev Day doesn't need the infighting.
Well, we didn't really talk about the opening match at all.
We did, too.
Only somewhat, but it was definitely more so a means to an end, which I don't get why, you know, that has been all, like, maybe Aiden doesn't watch NXT, I don't know, but that's been Almas's MO for months now, so why not let Lana even the odds? Like, why, like, what's the logic between English coming out to try to break it up when Lana was trying to help Rusev?
The logic behind English trying to break it up is that the catfight at ringside is distracting Rusev.
But it wasn't. She was taking away the distraction.
No, Rusev was clearly paying attention to them scrapping rather than looking at Andrade.
Fair enough, but him coming out hurt it even more, so I have a feeling that this is definitely the beginning of the end.
At least for the Rusev English pairing, which is unfortunate because I like them together. Our next contest scheduled for one fall.
One fall.
Okay, allow me to rephrase that. Our next contest scheduled for one murder.
One murder.
Thank you. I was waiting.
I think you would.
See Samoa Joe take on R-Truth. And, well, in case you're unaware of this, it is historically proven that Samoa Joe kills bitches dead. 55 seconds later, he chokes the Punk out Taz style with the Coquina clutch. 55 seconds. Uh-huh. Thanks for coming back, Truth. Appreciate it.
I mean, is it really anything less than you expected?
No, it's exactly what it needed to be, given what we find out later on in the show as well.
Yes.
I'm not arguing that, but at the same time, thanks for coming, Truth!
I mean, the same thing happened to a younger version of Truth now, last week.
That would be Ty Dillinger.
Yes.
And yeah, he got choked out in about 3 minutes, so he lasted three times as long as Truth did. He's got that going for him.
Yeah, he does.
Dillinger's actually not that young, by the way.
Really?
You know, he's been with the WWE since 2006.
Damn.
I mean, off and on intermittently, but do you remember the DX backstage segment where the controversy segment that they did where Shawn Michaels super kicked Stan?
Oh, yeah.
That was Ty Dillinger.
Oh, okay. I think I remembered seeing that in an article, like, where I was reading, like, you know, WWE guys who have been in the company before that you may not have known about.
Tommaso Ciampa as the lawyer for Muhammad Hassan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Dean Ambrose looking really weird in red hair.
CM Punk is a gangster for John Cena. Yeah, I'm aware. Asuka is super duper getting excited about the pay-per-view. Yeah! Party! Woo! Am I being over the top enough here, or do I need to tone it up? Because I think I can, but I don't want to blow out my voice. We do still have a 205 Live review to do.
Yeah, don't go too hard, because I think WWE has taken care of that enough.
Hold on. I need some water. Give me a second. Okay. Our next contest, scheduled for one murder.
One murder.
That's back to back, too. That's not good.
Two murders back to back. No bueno.
That's premeditation, Road Dogg. You're in trouble. Is Asuka taking on poor Billy Kay? I like me some Billy Kay. Asuka does not, and well, Asuka's opinion is the one that matters.
Is it bad that I was honestly worried about this match?
What do you mean?
Just what I said.
About Asuka losing to Billy Kay? Nah, this was definitely one of those rebound matches for Asuka. I had no
You
doubt
would
about.
Hope, but yeah. With how the Iconics have been pushed and everything.
The Iconics are basically the Bellas 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Which you heard it here first. Billy and Peyton against Nikki and Brie at the pay-per-view.
Oh, God. No, you know what would be even worse? And this is actually, honestly, probably a better comparison. Iconics versus Laequl.
Okay, if that means Layla comes back, I'm all for it. I miss Layla. Anywho. Continuing on. Nakamura sends a warning to Jeff Hardy as well. Miz and family take photos backstage. And then we get to the big promo segment for the evening. AJ Styles' SummerSlam opponent gets revealed. But first, James Ellsworth gets himself fired. Uh-huh. Yeah, sure. That'll last.
So you brought him back just to bury Asuka.
Bury is a relative concept that protects Asuka and the losses with his involvement.
Not really when you make her look like a complete idiot.
Well, I'm not saying she didn't look like a dumbass. I'm just saying it protects her because of the outside interference. It's not like she suffered a clean pinfall loss to Carmelo on either occasion.
That Extreme Rules loss, I'm counting as clean because she was a complete and utter idiot.
Well, you know, shark cages, they happen, man. Meanwhile, while Ellsworth is being kicked out of the building by Paige, ta-ta, sweetheart. Samoa Joe arrives to kill another bitch dead. This particular one is AJ Styles. Coquina clutch, choke out, done. Joe then signs the contract, and we have our title match for the SmackDown Heavyweight title at SummerSlam.
I kind of wish they would have gone a different route on this, because, you know, shortly after Paige finds him and is like, what are you doing? You know, yes, you were my choice, but, you know, that's not the way to handle it. I wish it would have been where she would have said, you weren't my choice, and, like, we got a triple threat out of it or something.
Why ruin Joe versus Styles? Why overcomplicate?
It just would have been funny.
No, it wouldn't have, because it would have doubled, be a really good match.
True, but, okay, fair enough. If this were a smaller pay-per-view, I would have done that. But I'll agree with you for SummerSlam.
Let this match shit for SummerSlam here. This is a... If you'd have told 2008 Harry that AJ Styles and Samoa Joe were going to wrestle for a WWE Heavyweight Championship on a pay-per-view, I'd have called you a goddamn liar.
Mm-hmm.
So let this match be. Let's have our moment.
Let's just hope that this is a better feud than the previous AJ Styles quote unquote dream match.
See, I think Joe has something to prove here. So I think him and AJ are going to go balls Mahoney to the wall.
Sure.
I'm being told I can't say balls Mahoney. That aforementioned segment with Joe and Paige is next here. Paige is not happy about Joe doing what he did, but Joe tells Paige that coming out the way that she had planned would have been pedestrian, but him attacking AJ the way that he did was phenomenal. Nice touch. Carmella arrives and is disappointed, upset, angry. I can't tell. She has like one facial expression. Paige tells her that she's got the money to do so. Go and buy a new boyfriend. That feels like prostitution. Not cool, Paige. Carmella says that she's instead going to go beat Becky right now and keep Becky as a pretender to the throne of the princess of Staten Island. Our next contest, scheduled for one fall.
One fall.
is the non-title match between Carmella and Becky Lynch. And it is a tap, tap, tap at it like Mr. Bojangles on speed as Becky straight fires Carmella into the disarmor at 7 minutes and 5 seconds. Okay, this match result was a foregone conclusion even before Ellsworth's firing.
Yeah.
Why do I get the very distinct feeling that Ellsworth is going to show up as a fan at SummerSlam and cost Becky the title?
Yeah, you're probably right.
I don't think that it's over for Ellsworth. Any thoughts on the match itself?
I mean, the match was decent. You know, like you said, it was pretty much a foregone conclusion that Becky was going to win here. Nothing too spectacular, though.
A bludgeon bromos... bromos? They're bromos? A bludgeon brothers promo. But that's all, folks. As they promised to bludgeon the winner of the tag team tournament... title contenders tournament. I cannot speak English today. Brandon, talk.
Yeah, I mean, these two, you know, it's the Bludgeon Brothers. They're going to bludgeon people. And whoever gets in their way, they're going to murder them. Simple as that.
The first of the tag team title contenders series is next as the New Day team of Big E and Xavier Woods takes on the Sanity team of Eric Young and Killian Dane. No, it was Alexander Wolfe and Killian Dane. My mistake. The New Day pick up the win with Midnight Hour at 7.5 minutes. But man, there was outside interference galore in this contest here.
Well, I mean, I feel like
they're setting up for yet another New Day and Sanity match, and whoever wins the other tag team qualifiers match is going to be the team that gets the opportunity to face the Bludgeons at SummerSlam.
Probably. But, I mean, it's what you expect with these trios, because, you know, they have that extra person outside, so... you're going to have interference galore.
It gets to the point where it overwhelms the match here. And it's unfortunate because these are four men that are capable of going. We've seen more and more what Xavier's capable of in recent weeks. Big E's been kind of, in my opinion, the standout star of the New Day this entire time here. And with Sanity just having been called up to the main roster, I would have appreciated the opportunity to let them go out there and have the kind of match that would establish themselves as what they're capable of to the fans in the WWE universe that might not be as familiar with NXT as the hardcore watchers are.
Yeah. Unless this match, like you said, I have a feeling the winner of the next qualifier will be the number one contender. But unless it's at least in part as a result of Sanity interference, it doesn't really make much sense to give New Day another win here when I would assume that you're going to try to push Sanity at least a little bit.
Especially after Sanity had picked up pinfall victory last week on SmackDown when Eric Young pinned Kofi Kingston with the Young Blood neckbreaker, and then they had won the tables match at Extreme Rules on the pre-show as well.
Exactly.
This is an opportunity for the establishment of a stable at the top of the card here, and rather than taking that opportunity with two legitimate threats in the division and a guy who's been proving himself as more than competent in the two legitimate threats in Eric Young and Killian Dane, and the guy that's been proving himself as more than competent lately in Alexander Wolfe, you're instead using them to further a different sub-angle with which that Sanity might not be able to recover from.
Exactly. The one way that I would like them to go with this, if they are going to have another trios match or whatnot at SummerSlam, is that be the way to introduce Nikki Cross into the fold.
Kind of like how I predicted at the Extreme Rules pre-show. Yes. With her getting involved in the finish.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was surprised it didn't happen at Extreme Rules. If they end up doing it again at SummerSlam in some kind of stipulated match, then I would look for Nikki Cross to show up there, especially since Nikki was on Monday Night Raw when they did the announcement.
Well. Not just on. I was shocked that she was in the forefront. Like, you know, that kind of gave away that she's coming up soon. I would, or at least that's my thought on it.
I would certainly think so as well. Post-match, the bar comes back to SmackDown. Well, good, it's been long enough. And they talk about the fact that they miss being the tag team champions. But I'm the tag team champion. Oh, wait, that was last pay-per-view. Never mind. They plan to win the tournament and win the titles. Okay, I'm just going to go ahead and stay this. Cesaro, Sheamus, Harper, and Rowan beating the out of each other for 15 minutes on pay-per-view. Sign me up. Sign me up. Anything?
I'd personally probably prefer the Usos, but I'd be okay with that match.
Paige hires Sin Cara to babysit Monroe Sky. Of course she does. But Miz and Maurice are of the opinion that you can't find good help anymore, so they'll just bring Monroe out to the ring with them. It's a celebration of Miz and Mrs. And it's the celebration is proceeded to be ruined by Daniel Bryan, who plays a clip package of mistakes and career lows for Miz instead of highlight package for Miz and Mrs., which debuts after SmackDown, if you didn't know, because they haven't been driving home that point the entire night as well. I do need to watch that, though, because that actually does look pretty funny. Anyway, Bryan then says he's going, why is he congratulating Miz from backstage? He should come down to the ring and do so. Bryan gets into the ring after beating up Miz's security. Seriously, Miz, hire better security. This always happens. Anyway, as soon as he gets into the ring, Miz throws Monroe. Wait, that was just a mannequin. You liar! There's your Family Guy reference. And Miz proceeds to lay in a beatdown on Daniel Bryan to stand tall as we go off the air.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny. Both Raw and SmackDown, and we've talked about this before where SmackDown likes to copy Raw. The whole Miz and Miz TV plugs throughout the night was basically the same as all the Elias stuff on Raw.
Well, that's because I walk with Elias.
Oh, yes. Have you listened to that yet?
Bits and pieces, not the full album.
Neither have I. I just heard the first song and it was awesome.
What were your thoughts on Miz TV in general, though, Brandon?
I mean, it was what you expect with Miz TV, and especially with them debuting Miz and Mrs., you know, it's what you expected. And then the whole Bryan thing with him basically doing what Miz did to him last week was pretty funny. And him being like, oh, I gotta go talk to, you know, the production guy in the back. But, you know, overall, it just furthered the whole feud between Miz and Bryan and what we expect to be a match at SummerSlam.
And then, in the immortal words of Porky Pig, ebbity-bib, but that's all, folks. Bringing an end to this week's episode of Tuesday Night SmackDown Live. Scale of 1 to 10, Brandon.
I'll give it a 6.5. You know, there wasn't really all that much here. You know, yes, we got, excuse me, we got the continuation of the whole Rusev Day, thing with them having some infighting. You got Styles' new opponent. You got Becky becoming number one contender, but outside of that, nothing really crazy, nothing to write home about on this show.
See, I'm actually a little bit higher than you are here. I'm giving it a 7.5. I actually really enjoyed this one. You got a reestablishment for Asuka to help get her back on track. You have the continuation of what we're going to be seeing from Andrade Cien Almas. Samoa Joe and AJ Styles should be fantastic. If they deliver, Cesaro and Sheamus versus the Bludgeon Brothers should be fantastic. Orton, Shinsuke, Randy, and Jeff Hardy. Not Orton, Shinsuke, and Randy Orton, because that would be impossible. But Orton, Shinsuke, and Jeff Hardy for the U.S. title should be very good. The SmackDown side of the SummerSlam card is looking really entertaining and not at all rehashed, much the way Monday Night Raw side is looking.
Mm-hmm. I'll give you that.
That being said, though, I would say that the SummerSlam card is starting to come together quite nicely here.
Oh, yes.
I'm not going to be that guy that says he doesn't care about Roman and Brock because everybody else is, and I'd just be piling on at this point. But with the possibility of a Braun Strowman cash-in looming over that match, there's something to be entertained by that.
Well, we may not be getting that.
Well, I'll get to that in a second. Kevin Owens cut arguably his best promo of the year on Monday Night Raw last night. On Monday night, excuse me. We're doing this on Wednesday for sake of timeline. But Owens cut maybe his best promo of the year talking about what happened with his son when his son saw him get thrown off at the top of the cage. And as somebody that follows along with the adventures of Kevin, Owen, and Karina, that hits home. As a father, when your child finds out that you're mortal, I kind of sympathize with him, you know? So Owen and Strowman should be interesting at SummerSlam as well. Ziggler and Rollins, assuming they put an appropriate stipulation on it at SummerSlam, should be entertaining too. And then we have the probability of the Revival and the B-Team and the Woken and Wyatts and probably another team or two thrown into a multi-man cluster fudge for the Raw Tag Team titles here. And then on SmackDown, you've got the triple threat for the U.S. title looming. You've got the Bludgeons defending the SmackDown Tag Team titles, Carmella and Becky, and then Joe and Styles here. SummerSlam's coming together quite nicely.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk more about that here a little bit later on as we get closer and closer to the show, but I won't be here to talk about it next week. I am taking next week's episode of SmackDown Live and 205 Live off because I am going to be out of state. Hopefully Liz is back. If she's not, Brandon, good luck finding a co-host.
Yeah.
I'd really rather not have to miss the show completely, because if we do, then we're doing it on Friday when I come home.
Okay.
Assuming I get a chance to watch. Spotify is here. But Glacier's not. We're sorry. Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, CastBox, Podbean. You name it, you can find the W2M Network family of podcasts on it. In addition, you can find us online at w2mnet.com. Before we get out of here, because I completely forgot, Brandon, one word review for tonight's SmackDown Live.
I'll say progression. You know, you're progressing the story with Rusev Day. You've gotten title matches set up now, and title matches, you know, getting started with the tag team tournament. So, you know, they're progressing closer and closer towards SummerSlam.
I'm going to go with entertaining. I thought tonight's show, I thought last night's episode of SmackDown kind of flew by. I enjoyed it. He's Brandon Biskobing. I'm Harry Broadhurst. This has been the Wrestling to the Max SmackDown Live review for Tuesday, July 24th, 2018. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you on 205 Live here in a few moments.